Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61.
Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume. He's Smiley Kaufman. And man, Smiley, we were going to do like a full breakdown of the PGA Tour season, look back at all the the various events and storylines. But then we just got hit with a ton of golf news that we have to cover. And so we will have a full recap coming on the other side of Thanksgiving, probably early December, looking back at the year, looking back at all the various guys who earned cards and earned status through the DP World Tour, things like that. But today we're just kind of dig into the freshest storylines that happened on and off the golf course. So we got to start with our guy, Ludvig Åberg, who wins his first PGA Tour event, which is just an amazing year for Ludvig. I mean, when he was his first, I mean, graduated from Texas Tech mere months ago, wins his first DP World Tour event, gets picked to play on the Ryder Cup team, goes out, teams up with Victor Hovland and beats the number one player in the world and a five-time major winner, 9-7 in a group that you're watching at the Ryder Cup, wins the Ryder Cup, and then goes out and finishes off this year with his first PGA Tour win. So just kind of, you know, your reaction. So you were walking with that final group yesterday, your reaction to just watching Ludvig put the final touches on his first tour win.
Bro, he's a machine, an absolute machine. And I don't say that lightly. This kid is, I mean, he's unflappable. And the amount of times he would hit the same shot over and over right at the flagstick, just, I mean, I've gotten to watch him play at the Ryder Cup, like you said, seeing him play at RSM. I mean, dude, he shot 122 on the weekend. I mean, come on.
And silly.
Listen, silly. I will say, if you and I played a best ball scramble, we may have beaten him potentially, but probably not. I mean, it was not playing hard whatsoever on the weekend at the RSM. It was as easy as a setup as I've seen in a long time. Just the fairways were super soft, so they were playing very wide. There was no rough. The greens were so soft. It was a dartboard, and the greens were perfect. So you give these guys wedges on a par 70. I mean, yeah, they're going to scare 59, which we saw from Mackenzie Hughes. We saw from Eric Cole, who shot 28 on the backside on Saturday, and then Ludvig shooting 122 on the weekend. I mean, come on, dude. It was impressive, though, man. He just... You know, I got it on the end of the podcast, just talk about Ludvig, just how Victor on our podcast talked about, dude, he's the Iceman. And that was the sense I got from the guy, was that he didn't look nervous. He didn't look like this moment was too big for him. So just really exciting. The fact that this guy's on the PGA Tour, that he's not on the LIV Golf Tour, and that we get to watch him, like, this is probably the one really, really good move you could say that the PGA Tour has made, is that the PGA Tour U program that they have gets a guy like Ludvig on the PGA Tour and not on the Korn Ferry Tour, because it's no doubt that the guy should have been on the PGA Tour right out of college. And that's where the system is correct. And when I was playing, I was so against the PGA Tour U thing. I thought it was bull crap that a guy gets to skip a step. Because when you get out in pro golf, it doesn't matter how good you were in college. And there's been so many good college players that haven't made it to the PGA Tour and been successful. So any mini tour player, any Korn Ferry Tour player that's trying to get on the PGA Tour, you're like, dude, this is bullcrap that a guy's taking my spot. But in this case, they got it right. And this guy has been incredible. He's going to be so good for the game. He's just, to me, you know, his personalities, he's got a little bit of charisma to him, but man, he's just really good. He's just so good, Charlie.
Yeah. Couple things there that I want to circle back on. Ben On tweeted yesterday, we need to stop giving out tour cards to these college kids. Obviously, tongue in cheek there,
but
to your point, I mean, it is amazing the wave of talent that's coming out. I mean, Ludwig obviously is the big name, but Gordon Sargent, Nick Dunlap, I mean, kids like David Ford. I mean, there's a whole wave of talent. And guys that were in Ludwig's class as well and that played on the Korn Ferry Tour this last year, Adrian Dumont de Chassart. I mean, they're just a lot of guys. That the future looks really bright, you know, for the PGA Tour. And this program is one way to get those guys on tour. You know, to your point on the scoring, I thought it was interesting. I think I have all these stats right. He tied the PGA Tour scoring record for an event, and he broke the scoring record at the RSM Classic by 7 shots. Well, I mean, Mackenzie Hughes finished 4 shots off him. So Mackenzie would have broken the record.
And then 60, Tyler Duncan and Aries weekend? Cole. Is that what Mackenzie shot on the weekend?
Mackenzie Hughes shot 66-3 and drop shots Ludwig Åberg, who shot 61-61. I mean, it's just silly. So yeah, the scoring was great, but still, you know, you got to go out and shoot the score. And I think he spoke to that in his press conference, you know, kind of on the back end, his winner's press conference, of just, you know, the way that Mackenzie pushed him and just dealing with those nerves. And there's a clip here that I want to play for you, because I think it's interesting, because in that interview that you referenced with Victor Hovland, where we talked about Ludwig at the Ryder Cup and just how he looked a little nervous early on, but the way he kind of dealt with those nerves and just eased his way in the competition, then just sort of took over and dominated, you know, in the matches they played together. And so here is a clip of Ludwig yesterday talking about, you know, just dealing with those nerves, feeling nervous, but how he kind of reacts to that. And I just love to hear your thoughts on this.
There's a lot of these scenarios running through your head. What's going to happen? Am I going to win? Am I not going to win? And, you know, I've had a lot of experience over the last few months to kind of prepare me for those moments. And, you know, I try not to get ahead of myself. I was quite calm, but, you know, I was obviously very nervous. I can't really deny that. And but it's really cool to kind of see myself do that. And it gives me a lot of comfort and validity that, you know, I can do it. So my tendency is to get more stuck in the past more so than the future. So I tend to get more disappointed and frustrated with myself more so than, you know, getting angry. I never get angry, but I do get disappointed and that kind of lingers. So I think this week I did a really good job of letting that go. But breathing really helps to kind of calm you down, and then you try to just stay where your feet are, really.
So two things from that interview. I picked up when he talked about just disappointment and just lingering in the past. First off, who says that? I will say that most people in that position are always looking forward, you know, trying to worry about not winning. There's so many things that come in your mind on the back nine on a Sunday, trying to win the first time, and none of it's stuff that's behind you. It's all stuff that's in front of you. So that was interesting how he said that. And I think I kind of revert back to maybe what he's referencing. He talked about all the experience that he's had that they got him in a position to where he felt comfortable to win today. He felt calm. But I go back to maybe the BMW Championship, where he's leading that tournament going into the final round, and he shoots, I think, a couple over, doesn't get the job done. You were the one, I think you watched a little bit of those first couple holes for him and just kind of was off and ends up losing that championship. And maybe that's the disappointment that he was kind of referring to. But I think when we look at the RSM Classic yesterday and why he maybe did get the job done, first off, he wasn't looking forward, which is incredible to do. That's not many players are able to do that, but he references breathing and why he was able to kind of lean on that a little bit. And the takeaway from that is, I don't think you see players that are quite mentally as tough and prepared as a guy like Ludwig is at his age. And you could see it in his mannerisms, the way he walks around. You don't see fret. You don't see panic. There's none of that. And I think that's when Victor Hovland, when we talked about how he's the Iceman, he didn't look nervous. Dude, that's what I see too. And it's scary as shit. If I was Mackenzie Hughes looking at that, and seriously, dude, he hits it. He bombs it. He's a great iron player. He's got great touch with his wedges. I hardly saw him chip because he didn't miss a green. But when I did see him chip, he chipped it good and putts it well. But and I've referred to why with Ludwig, why I think he's so good. And the first thing I picked up on him from watching him was how reactive he plays the game of golf. He doesn't think about the shot too much. He makes a decision. He gets up there and plays. And too often with him, we're almost missing shots from him on TV because he plays so quickly. On 18 on Sunday yesterday, we almost missed his second shot because he was already over the ball after the first guy had already hit. And it's so refreshing to see a young player be this talented and be this ready for the big stage. And it's a wave like this in sports right now. You see it with like Carlos Alcaraz, you know, all these young players that are built ready to win at an early age. And let me remind you as well, Charlie, this guy's won on the PGA Tour now. He's won on the DP World Tour. He's been a part of a winning Ryder Cup team. And we haven't even seen him play in one major championship. And I asked Billy Ray Brown, and I'll ask you the same question, walking off the 10th tee yesterday. I said, Billy Ray, how many majors is this guy going to win? And he kind of looked at me with his face. He's like, you know what? If he stays healthy and he doesn't change anything, 6. And I was thinking in my head, that seemed a little light. I really do believe that's on the light side because I think this guy's capable of winning 10 plus majors. And I know that sounds ridiculous in this day and age, but dude, we haven't even seen him play a major championship. That's a ridiculous statement to make by me, but holy crap, dude, he's unreal.
Yeah. I don't think 6 is far fetched at all.
And I'm a little turning more aggressive? In your direction. Is that aggressive? Should I go back on that?
I don't know, because you got to look at what are the factors that go into he's young. We say he's 24 years old. And so the obvious question mark that nobody can really predict is health. But if you look at his swing, I don't see anything there that worries me of him going after in a certain way. You know, Zalatoris. I would even give him more of an edge. I mean, he's still young, but I mean, when we listen to this sound that we just did, that's the Iceman giving you the cliff notes on what makes him the Iceman of just like, hey, I'll even tell you that I feel the nerves sometimes, but this is kind of how I displace those and just work within those and work through these shots in a way that, to your point, is calm and efficient and cool. And to me, it's, you know, I think, you know, Brooks obviously has a bulletproof mentality, but you know, that is almost a calmer, simpler approach to the game that really kind of keeps him balanced. And
10's ridiculous. You mentioned I'm going back on 10.
You're going back on 10?
That's a ridiculous statement. I'm going to go back with Billy Ray. And I'm going to agree with him that 6 is a fair number.
Boy, it's I think it's three big things. It's health and it's form. And it's other competitors. And I think the last one is the most important because of all the reasons we've just stated in this interview, 100%. Is that he looks like he should be able to stay healthy. He looks like a guy that I saw some stat yesterday where the rounds he's played on the PGA Tour this year, where he hasn't shot over maybe a 74 once, 73 or 74, is just something absurd. And then all the sub 60 rounds he shot is right up there with the guys who were, you know, top 10 in the world players. So, you know, you think he's a guy that even if he does lose his form, it's going to be pretty easy for him to get it back on track. I think the last thing is the biggest factor is that we have all these young guys coming up who, you know, you can play as good as you want to, but if those guys have a good day, a good week, you know, they might just go out there and win it from you. It has nothing to do with you losing it. And so that's the thing I think for him that probably, if I'm ballparking a prediction, it probably is less than double digits because it's really, really hard to do.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean,
but I wouldn't be shocked if he won 10.
Only 2 people have ever done it. So let's be real. I said 10 because that's how ridiculous I think this kid is. So
it's amazing.
I think that's maybe if that's the ceiling and if I definitely think he's going to win at least one major. I would be surprised if he didn't win a major championship. But that's kind of just when I think about. I went to the U.S. Open this year in tennis and watched Novak Djokovic play. And when I watched him play, it wasn't that he was just crazy elite at everything. He was great at everything that he did, and it just looked like you were playing against a wall. And what mm-hmm. I mean by that, it's like when you practice tennis and you're hitting into the wall, and it's just like the guy on the other side just continues to hit the perfect shot over and over again and just wear you down. And that's what I saw from Novak. Besides his already just glaring talent, it wasn't just this like the best of all time at certain things. And now, granted, you could probably argue he's the best of all time at certain areas of his game, but there was no weaknesses in his game. And when I watched Ludwig, that's what I felt like McKenzie was going up against yesterday, is you're going up against a wall, a guy that's just going to continue to return and hit perfect shots over and over again. And granted, I watched this at the RSM Classic at a very easy golf course that can make any golfer look really, really good. It just was not playing very hard. But let's go back to the Ryder Cup, where I did get to watch him play there. And this guy, let's not forget him and it's Novak. I'm already on this tennis thing. Him and Victor, 9-7 against Brooks and Scotty. And granted, now Brooks and Scotty did not play well, but dude, what Victor and Ludwig did that day, it was absurd. Neither of them missed a fairway, neither of them missed a green. They were like 7-under through 11 in alternate shot. Just silly stuff. So yeah, I'm obviously buying stock. And if you were somebody who's looking for like futures and stuff like that, if you missed the boat on Ludwig, he's probably going to be a top five, top six on the odd sheet at the Masters. And that's, I don't know where he's at now, but I imagine that's probably where he's going to be sitting. And I just don't see how you don't buy stock in this kid.
Well, and I want to get into next year, what we're projecting for him next year, because I think that's an interesting conversation. I do want to put one bow on this season, because I think we've had Eric Cole's name pretty much engraved in the Rookie of the Year trophy for weeks now.
Oh, God, dude. But Did we jinx that to him?
I don't think it's just us. I think it's a little bit of everybody. I mean, and I'm wondering now, like, look, no disrespect to Eric Cole, who almost had like an Ironman year where he played in a zillion events. He was playing in non-PGA Tour events on weeks he wasn't in tournaments. Guy just loves playing golf. And what he did, especially as a guy who is, you know, was 33 to 34 this year and you know, didn't have a status in the years prior and kind of plays his way into all these different events and plays really well. But you know, Ludwig coming on late, I think Ludwig's got to be a Rookie of the Year. Do you agree, or do you think that's still Eric Cole's award?
So we debated this on the air, and it was Eric Cole's to win this week. The only person that couldn't win was Ludwig, or he was going to win. It's just really bad break for Eric Cole, because I really think Ludwig's probably going to win now. The recency bias of what Ludwig's done, not to say Eric Cole. I mean, Eric Cole, I think, just had four top four finishes in the fall. I got to go back and double check that, but I think he finished four top fours in the fall.
He played very well in the fall. Yes.
Yeah. And I know the fall is not how we're judging this, but Eric Cole did get to play 37 times. And then, Ludwig played 15. Is that about right? Something around there.
Yeah.
Eric Cole did not make the tour championship. Correct? He finished around 37th, I believe.
That's correct. Yes, he did not. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
So he had a full season to get into that tour championship, where to me, that is a huge, huge deal for a rookie to solidify yourself as Rookie of the Year, is making the tour championship. So not making that to me was, and not making the tour championship and not winning, I think, leaves open debate for something like this to happen. And to me, it's a no-brainer now. Ludwig should be Rookie of the Year.
So if you're just looking at pure stats, Eric Cole played 37 events. He had two runner-ups. He had seven top 10s, 14 top 25s. He made 27 cuts, missed 10. He finished 43rd in the FedEx Cup. So yes, missed out on the Tour Championship and made $5.5 million. Ludvig in 11 events won once. And of course, Eric did not win an event. He had one runner up. He had four top tens, eight top 25s, made 10 cuts, only missed one. The FedEx. So this is honestly another kind of illustrator of what he did this fall. And I know we said, hey, we're waiting the fall less, but he entered the fall 135th on the FedEx Cup standings and he ends it 53rd. So he got after it this fall and made $3.1 million. So, I mean, yeah. Like it depends, I guess it depends on how you sort of value these things. And honestly, I could see a similar type of discussion taking place for player of the year, whether we're going to reward Scottie Scheffler for his consistency, you know, across the year without the wins, or whether we're going to reward John Rahm or Victor Hovland for peaking. And it's funny because I am a guy who's argued for Scottie as a player of the year, but in this particular argument, it's like, I think you got to go with Ludvig. And the other thing too is, and I hate that this comes on the conversation,
to win championships, Charlie.
But it's what is history going to look back on? What's going to look better? I mean, Ludvig Åberg, you know, we're going to look back and be like, how is he not the rookie of the year? Who is this Eric Cole guy? And I hate that that's the way it is, but that's just kind of the way it is.
Yeah, I'm on the Ludvig rookie of the year, Victor player of the year. I think you can make a case for Rahm and then make a case for Scottie after that. Just to follow up on just comparing the two between Eric Cole and Ludvig Åberg, Sean Martin had a great tweet, and this was also kind of comparing the two, and you just touched on most of them, but Ludvig only playing 11 events, his points per event before this event was 28.2, and points per event for Eric Cole was 31.7. So he was a little higher going into the week, but then
okay.
Then Ludvig won, so I imagine he's well over that 28.7, probably closer to the 40 or 50 mark now. So now he's earning well more as far as points per event goes. So small sample size, it's really tough for some people to say, how can somebody be the rookie of the year when they only played 11 times on that tour? But shoot, I mean, he finished 53rd in the FedEx Cup. Now if Ludvig was able to continue to push up the FedEx Cup. So if Eric Cole finished at 37th, I believe, so he would have kept moving up. So right now he's stagnant at 37. So it is a little bit kind of weird to say, oh, well, you know, Ludvig finished 53rd, Eric finished 37th. That's really close. You know, if we're comparing like things as far as that's concerned, you know, Eric Cole didn't get a win. Ludvig did get the win. But you got to remember how well he played in the fall, Eric Cole. So you can make a case for both, but man, it's just that recency bias thing. And kind of similar to this Heisman voting thing, like Jaden Daniels is a guy that probably has the best stats, probably has been the most electric player, but Bo Nix goes out and throws for 7 touchdowns against Washington in the Pac-12 championship. It's going to be a recency bias of what we just saw. It's kind of how it goes with voting.
Many
right?
people saying Drake May, you know? I mean,
here we go.
Many, many people.
ones of people.
Well, we talked a little bit about expectations for Ludvig in 2024, you know, over under. We talked about, I guess, career majors, but, you know, wins, where it'll be at in the OWGR. All stuff that we'll cover in the future. And I think one last thing that's important to note for Ludvig is he makes it to 53rd in the FedEx Cup fall. And he wins this event, of course, which means he's in the first two and really three, if you count the Century Signature event. So definitely big for him. But we are, Smiley, in a breaking news situation here on the Smiley Show.
Can you play a sound for that? Like, like to sound the alarms. Can we have like a...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we need to get some
like
cool buttons you can press for that.
I can edit in some like air horns on the back end of this. when you listen back to this, it's going to sound way cooler than the way we just recorded it. But yes, breaking news, and this comes to us via a Josh A. Carpenter tweet. The TGL is expected to announce later today that it will not launch until 2025 due to the damage caused at its venue in Florida. And that was, of course, and this is from a golf.com article written by Sean Zach, a temporary power outage took place at the side of that stadium, causing the air sealed dome to deflate. And, you know, there's speculation as to whether it was human error, mechanical error, the air in that white blob kind of deflated and left all the technology, the high end technology that they're using to have this thing pulled off, susceptible to elements. And so at the time of the writing of this article, they were unsure as to whether or not TGL would continue in early January, which was a slated launch. But now it's looking likely they're going to push the league until 2025. And so a ton of impact here, ESPN's TV contract, player schedules. Let's just start with kind of an open-ended one, which is, Smiley, I mean, how devastating is this for a project that was supposed to maybe ward off a live threat, tap into new audiences, all the above? I mean, how big of a blow is this?
You know, it just seemed like the whole thing was kind of getting rushed towards the end. The fact that everything wasn't built, you know, only a player or two has been in the testing component of it. You know, and with stuff like this, when you kind of get closer to as far as a date goes and you start hearing that, wait, this thing isn't even built yet, then the crazy storm comes through. And maybe that everything was going to be on time and everything would have been just dandy. But to me, everything still felt a little rushed as far as the players maybe not having an understanding of what the concept was. I think many of the fans didn't really understand it either until we saw that Cameron Young video of him kind of doing some testing. And we didn't know it was going to be on grass. I mean, that was something right. That was very I just think the picture from not only the players, but the fans as well, didn't really know exactly what it's going to be like. I think we were all excited about it, but I think the big issue that they had was looking at the calendar. It's like, if it was a month that they needed, if it was 2 months that they needed to get it, the stadium built and back and ready to go, it ran into the issue was the ESPN windows that they had. So I think this thing was going to run from what, January to like just short of April. Is that about right? I'm not sure what the window was.
You know, it's interesting because they only had announced the first few dates. Looking at this and trying to see how, you know, if it was a 15-week season, when are the rest of the dates going to fall? And are they dates that were they going to try to pack in a bunch of them around the Florida swing? Because that would make a lot of sense travel-wise. You know, were they going to try to stretch it out over the course of the year, maybe all the way to August? But if you know, April would seem to make a lot of sense to kind of get the majority of it out of the way before you get into major season and stuff like that. So, you know, if that indeed was the plan and we didn't know the rest of the dates, then it makes a ton of sense to say, if we were already going to have to postpone this thing, now we're having to pack all these, you know, TGL matches, whatever you want to call them, into an even tighter window, which is even more of a strain on player schedules. And it's already a thing that's driven a guy like John Rahm out of the first year of this league. Let's just punt on it. And I think your point is a really valid one, where it's if this thing was going to be rushed and it wasn't going to come off the way that they wanted it to come off.
Another year of planning to me doesn't kill this. I really think it would have been great to get it started, just to see, you know, it, even the networks too. I think it gives them more time to figure out exactly, you know, if they have the right team organized, you know, for the players being able to go on an off week in the Florida swing after it's done being built, and you could go swing by and really do some testing on it, because nothing is worse for the players if the technology isn't correct in their mind, because they're like, wait, this sucks. You know, I know this shot isn't right. Like, I know what this is cutting or whatever it is. And they get to practice on it, which I think would be beneficial for any of the guys. Cause maybe some of these players before going would be like, dude, I'll fly down to do this before going on live TV, so I know what it's like. It's like playing a practice round. Cause you don't want to embarrass yourself on live television. Right. So, all right. So I think the big thing I was kind of getting to with the windows there is that they couldn't push it back, because ESPN already has scheduled broadcasting stuff with the NBA playoffs, and they couldn't just move it. They have a window that ESPN said, this is when we're slotted you guys in. Now, if we push you back, we just don't have the availability. So if it would maybe if they had done a deal with another network that had the flexibility, then they could have just pushed us back to later in the year towards the summer. Let's say if it was with a CBS or an NBC, whoever it would be, a TNT. But because ESPN's commitment to the NBA playoffs and whatever else they have, they just weren't able to just push it back a month. So now 2025, we get to continue to talk about the TGL and what really is it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there is still one very important TGL that is still very much in play and is coming to you later this week, which is that's a little teaser for the Thanksgiving League dropping on Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that TGL. And you'll know what that is when it drops. It's going to be, you know, equally, if not even more fanfare worthy than the original TGL. But that's all by way of saying it's the thing that I think is interesting in looking at this is I think all the points you're making are valid. I think that you know you want a good product, not a rush product. You want to be, you know,
yeah, it could be cool,
you don't
want
to
be
first, like, you want to be right.
It really could be cool. It felt rushed.
Right. We see you give some time.
That to me, like the players not having an idea what it was going to be like, the stadium, we haven't seen pictures because it was still being built. Right. And now you see the overhead drone shots of the stadium. You're like, what in the world is this? How are they going to get this thing going in 2 months? It just felt like a disaster was looming on this. And there's nothing more important than a first impression when it comes to stuff like this. You cannot screw up the first look, not only for the fans' perspectives to keep them coming up and watching, but also for the people that are going to go in person, the players' first impressions of it. If they don't like the product and they don't believe in it, then it's really tough to keep it going. So, yeah.
I wonder on this too, like if, you know, they still haven't announced player number 24 since Rom departed.
I wonder if they're another year to get in place. Who's going to be in it now? Like, because it gives
that's another. I mean, because it could. I mean, and this is no disrespect to. I'm not even going to name a player that would get booted, right? But you know, another year of Ludwig Aubert. Let's say he wins a major this year.
If he wants in, it's like I bet they regret announcing those teams now because they could have gone a whole another year. But yeah,
and then how do you handle booting a guy? Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of stinks. You know, it's I don't know what if it's like a financial make good or I mean, who knows? Maybe they say, hey, we're going to expand to 8 teams. You know, we're going to create space for additional guys because now we, you know, we have guys that want in now that we're seeing a more polished product. I think they're all, you know, that's looking at the silver lining of it. Well, I guess it creates more headaches, but that's looking at the how could this thing expand with another year of prep. I wonder who feels like they lose the most here, whether it's the tour, whether it's Tiger or Rory, or whether it's like Netflix or Topgolf or just businesses that stand to benefit from a new wave of consumer interest in a place that isn't like traditional golf, you know, by pushing this a year.
I mean, you got to think the losers are all the investors, right? These athletes and stuff and all these celebrities that just invested all this money into each team and bought all these teams. And let's say you invested $1 million into a team. I have no idea if that's the number of what these guys are having to pay, but let's say that's the number. And you write $1 million check, and then you see this text or this email that was sent maybe a week or two ago, and you're like, wait, you mean this isn't going to be on TV until 2025? So are we going to just give me back that money now, and then I'll reissue it later once I to me, that would be a bit of a what's kind of going on here if I was an investor. So I would imagine they would be the first people that would be concerned about it. The players don't really, they don't care. It's what it starts when it starts, but I would imagine the investors and the folks that are running it are probably having the biggest, like, okay, I'm a little questioning this thing now.
100%. I think that if anything, the players probably are breathing a sigh of relief of like, I get my time back.
Exactly. But, yeah.
And this is something we didn't even have. This is something we didn't even have in our rundown, which is that all the people that the tour is trying to go and hit up for money right now, the pool is kind of shrinking, right? Like I read that the one of the investors that's pitching is one of the kind of the five, you know, private equity groups has Fenway Sports Group ownership, which are invested in Boston Common Golf. And, you know, and then there's this other report this last week that the tour is going to go to these tournament organizers, especially the ones in big cities, and ask for more money out of what they're making to be distributed in purses to the players. And, you know, some anonymous, I think, I guess, tournament director. Well, it's just interesting how, you know, there is a necessity right now in the game of golf to figure out how do we split up this pie the right way to keep the right people happy so we don't lose them to somewhere else, whether that's, you know, live or whatever. But I do wonder if, you know, kind of to your point, if like a team investor who wrote the check for the TGL team is in the process of writing the check to fund the PGA Tour so you can not have PIF investment, you know, maybe, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of crossover here and people who are putting on tournaments for the tour and they're having to write a bigger check to distribute to the players. At what point where they say, wait a second, like this is crazy. You can't keep asking for this and not providing some return on value. Yeah, that's very presumptive, but it is, I think when you're pointing out losers in the TGL and you're wondering, you know, does this impact, like, what does this impact on a larger, you know, scale deal and whether we're going to see other things within the tour structure take a hit because it's the same people who are getting asked to pay money over and over and over again.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I think even this going into the fall, you and I were talking about just plans for our show in this slow time of the year. And it's just been the opposite. The golf continues to make headlines and it's just ever changing, whether it's TGL, the PIF still not being figured out, policy board changes, Tiger Woods being back. There's just so many things that continue to be at the top of my timeline every single week. It's something that's always changing. And when I just think about the PGA Tour and next year, it's, you know, do we have is this format with the signature events, is this going to be the correct way that the PGA Tour is going to need to be operating as it moves forward? Is $20 million too much money? And that's something that eventually is going to be a question of, did we shoot for too high of a number for these guys to be paid right off the get-go? Is it compelling enough? Are the ratings going to reflect that? Because golf itself is growing like we've never seen it before. And this is without Tiger Woods. The game itself is on a rocket ship. And you see that with the YouTube, you see it with Top Golf, and there's just so many people that are interested in the game. And it's so odd to me that for a game and a sport that couldn't be growing more right now, that there's so much question marks and indecision and really just not knowing what the next year is going to really be like in the professional game at the highest level. Because a lot of times, you know, for things that are below the professional level to grow, you need the top part to be organized and to be the most compelling on TV and to be the thing that drives the other aspects of the sport. And with the game of golf right now, it's been maybe it has been that there's been so much interest in the chaos, which has helped driven the game, but still it's great that golf is so popular, but still it gives us something to talk about every week because our headlines continue to not stop week in and week out.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting about that is the growth is happening at the highest rate in non green grass golf or whatever the term is they're using is for that, you know, for the top golfs of the world, but that's where the growth is happening. And more so than, you know, a growth in a television audience for a PGA Tour product. And so that's why looking at this TGL thing, you know, that this was the tour's play to try to kind of carve into that audience and say, hey, you like doing this thing, right? Like you may not sit down and watch, you know, the Sony Open every week or, you know, I that the Sony Open, but just like you maybe you'll watch a major, but like you're not going to sit down maybe and watch this product every single week, but you know what you might do? You might binge, you know, a couple, six episodes of Full Swing, and you might, you know, go to Topgolf with your friends and hang out.
I didn't even talk about the Netflix effect. That was, other thing that brought people to the game was it was Full Swing.
Well, and I just think that that's, you know, I think I commend the tour for trying to make efforts in those directions to tap into those audiences. I don't know whether they'll successfully convert those people to watchers of the tour televised product. And I think that we've heard a lot of smart people say of late that, hey, this thing might be, we might be overvaluing this product and the money we're distributing to these players. But it's all interesting, and it's stuff that, yeah, kind of to your point, we could talk about this ad nauseum. I mean, there is just – and there's so many interesting ways to go with it. And honestly, like, probably not qualified enough to break it down in a full way, in a smart way. But I think that this one in particular, if it gets delayed and results in a better product, good. But that's another year you're pushing back from trying to tap into the segment of the audience that's growing at the highest rate. And that's a bummer. So – yeah,
I think this was last year. Remember when the PGA Tour launched that NFT program? Like, that this was going to be the next big game changer thing in professional golf. I think this is like before Full Swing. And I'm like, what the hell is an NFT?
remember NFTs, and Smiley? Remember those? Remember Bitcoin?
Dude, I read this thing. So you're telling me it's like an autograph, but like only one person. I was like, what in the world are we doing here? Why is this the next big thing, NFTs? And I tell you what, there were players behind it like, oh yeah, this could be huge. It could be huge.
I don't that one, if we're talking about things that we don't know about, and maybe this is going to make me look bad, but like, that's one really where I'm like, who knows if the crypto market is going to bounce back in a significant way. And then down the road, it's like, man, I really wish I had an NFT of Smiley freaking out next to an alligator at Bay Hill. You know, that's worth a zillion dollars now. It may very well could be. And I think that's part of it too, is a league that is having a unique type of interest, you know, from different audiences, is you got to kind of roll the dice and take risks and try to see what works and what doesn't. But all very, very interesting. And I think this is the part of the show, I can't believe we waited this far into the show to get to this piece of news. But I mean, Tiger's back.
I said it. We just didn't. We didn't blow the air horn about it.
With air horns again, you will hear air horns. You might even be hearing air horns right now as you're listening to this or watching this. There are air horns here. Tiger's back. He's playing the Hero World Challenge. You know who else is committed to the Hero World Challenge? Smiley Coppin. He's going to be down there in...
Breaking news.
Oh, air horn. More air horns here.
I will be at the Hero World Challenge. I am so pumped. I got...
With Tiger.
I got on to that event pretty late. I got the call last week that I'm going to be on the Bahamas. So that's exciting. That was like the one event I've always wanted to work. Just like 15, 20 dudes or however many it is. Tiger being back. I mean, dude, come on. This is going to be sweet. Can't wait.
So what does success look like for Tiger at the Hero? Cause like this one, I'll say it surprised me a little bit that he's playing in it. Like, I felt like he's a lock for the PNC cause he loves doing stuff with Charlie and he can take a cart. And so then going forward, it's, you know, what is this to prepare? And maybe part of this, and I don't want to say it's, you know, I don't want to read too much into it and say it's some calculated move other than Tiger just feels healthy and wants to play golf. But maybe he saw the writing on the wall with TGL and he wasn't able to play last year in the Hero. And it's like, if I go and play in this thing, it's going to be a nice bump in terms of, you know, viewership and for my event and with knowing that TGL is not going to happen. I don't know. But I mean, what if we're saying this, we get to the end of the week and Tiger did this, what will that be for it to be a success for him?
Yeah, I got a hot take. And I think anything better than last would be success.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I say that because I really think he's going to have some incredible rust. And just walking, getting used to just whatever his new surgery was, I guarantee you his golf swing is going to be way different because he's having to work on different things because his body's moving so differently. and taking that to the golf course. And I'm sure he's been putting hours and hours and hours on the range like he always has. But how is it going to translate to the golf course? Where is your rust factor going to be? How is the leg going to hold up walking over 72 holes? We've seen him walk with Charlie recently, so it's good to see him do that. He commented how he's still sore a little bit, but the fact that he's going to be walking, hasn't played since the Masters. Dude, if he goes out and finishes anything better than last, and it's such a crap thing for me to say, but seriously, like I would chalk that up as a success.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, just the fact that I would even, and I'm not saying this in any disrespectful way at all. If he plays all four rounds, that's a success.
If he plays healthy after 72 holes.
Right. Because I think what will stink is if he, you know, has to walk two or three rounds and it's like, whoa, this is a different type of tournament strain and I got to withdraw. You know, not that it's a big deal in the grand scheme of tour events or anything, but just more for the optics of how much do we think Tiger has left in the tank? Because everyone wants to keep believing in Tiger, myself included. And so I think that just finishing the tournament and playing all four rounds would be a big, big win for him.
I think why I expect rust from Tiger, besides that he hasn't played since April, is, dude, he's been busy. I'm talking busy. Yeah. He's been a full-time dad, which been so fun to see him caddying all the time for Charlie, helping him progress in his game at an important age. But dude, he's been seriously involved with the policy board. I'm talking phone calls and phone calls and phone calls, trying to get the PGA Tour settled in and get it going the direction that he believes it should be going. And when you combine the stress of that, traveling with Charlie, practicing, it kind of leaves out, like, is he getting enough reps on the golf course? Because this seemed like a pretty, I wouldn't say just late decision, but you would have liked to have seen him come out earlier and say he was playing. A lot of times you start seeing videos of him coming out that he's practicing, playing and that, and I'm sure he has been playing just as much as practicing, but you haven't seen just those random photos of him playing at whether at the Medalist with a group or something like that. You've just seen him kind of on the range. So you question just where he's going to be at from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah. I think we saw him at the Hay looking like a Call of Duty character a couple times on social media. Those were nice little, some shots playing with Charlie as well. But I mean, yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, that feels like the Masters, his injury feels like years ago, and he's been a key player in everything that's happened since then in terms of the development of TGL, the policy board.
He's busy with that too. He's just busy right
there's,
now.
There's a really busy. So,
but I mean, it's good for him though that he's the biggest 100%. Name in golf, and the fact that he's taking ownership and how the game's moving forward is something that I think he's going to be remembered by. Besides what he did on the golf course, is progressing the PGA Tour to, you know, Phil Mickelson was the one kicking and screaming on the way out the door and trying to blow up the game by trying to change the way the PGA Tour operates. Well, Tiger said, you know what, I'll stick over here and try to change the way it operates from the way I think it should do it, instead of leaving the PGA Tour, a place that I built my platform on. Now, you could argue that Tiger built the PGA Tour platform a little bit too, but besides the point. Well,
that's an interesting one, and we have more hero news here and stuff we want to get to, but just, you know, quickly, or as quickly as you can, do you think Tiger's level of involvement in the tour and maybe, you know, structures that are, you know, tour adjacent, do you think that happens the way it did without his injuries, you know, or does he amass so much money and so much fame and recognition where he doesn't have to at that point?
That's a good question. If he was still healthy, you have to question whether he would ever have gotten on the policy board. I don't think he would have ever done it if he didn't have time off, where he had time to invest in this. And yeah, that's a great question. I truly believe that probably no. And to him being on the policy board, so good for the tour. And
Huge.
Yeah, man, I just I'd never thought I'd say this in today's podcast, that Ludwig Gobert would win 10 majors and that Tiger Woods, if he doesn't finish last place. Like, those are two ridiculous statements that I made today, but I guess I can kind of back them up a little bit.
This is golf in 2023. I mean, this is what we do.
Overreaction Mondays.
Well, and the great thing about it is you can just overreact all you want, and then like a week later there'll be more news that you can just wash over your last overreaction with a new one. So speaking of overreactions to pieces of news, more news from the Hero. We saw Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele withdraw from the event. They were replaced by Justin Rose and Lucas Glover. There were a lot of rumblings. You know, you can't have any player movement today without people saying, "Oh, LIV, they're going to LIV." And anything could happen in today's day and age. But I saw something this morning from Jeff Shackelford's Quadrilateral newsletter that kind of made a good point about this, and something that I guess we all missed. But there was an exclusive in Today's Golfer on October 31st, where Xander talked about a lot of different things, you know, the Ryder Cup, his thoughts on Jay Monahan, offseason plans to find more distance. And one of the things he noted in that story was that he'd already decided to kind of shut it down to recharge for 2024. And so I guess we had that piece of information that wasn't, you know, fully connected to the Hero WD quite yet. But there were also rumors that Cantlay was going to follow suit and do the same thing. So, I mean, do you read into anything more there other than these guys are just like, I played enough golf, I want to relax, I'm doing it. I guess the optics are bad given everything that happened around the Ryder Cup, right?
It's just, it's hard not to read into it. And listen, I don't think they're going to the LIV Golf Tour. I really don't. And I truly believe that it's been difficult to get a read on Patrick Cantlay, because I really think there has been genuine interest through over the last year with him going to the LIV Golf Tour. I think there was definitely interest from both parties. And Xander Schauffele, to me, always seemed kind of attached to the hip of what Cantlay wanted to do. And I, not to say that Xander can't think for himself, it always just felt like those two were grouped together, whether that's right or wrong. And then all the stuff with Xander's dad and like the quotes that he kind of had about the PGA of America and the Ryder Cup made you think, wow, that's kind of the same thinking of some of the quotes that we've been rumored to hear about how Patrick Cantlay kind of sees all the situation, and then the hat stuff at the Ryder Cup. So definitely you can read into it. I don't believe they're going anywhere. I'd heard that Xander a couple weeks back wasn't really planning on playing Hero anyways. So then you wonder, okay, why is Cantlay not playing? But I don't know. I think it's very odd, but I think what you got to point to is like, okay, what has happened recently? All right, Patrick Cantlay has been appointed to the policy board of the PGA Tour. To me, that seems like a commitment to the tour. I don't see how you would read it any other way. Now, that would be a wild subplot if he got appointed to the policy
Double
board
agent.
Tour, and then also is still negotiating with the LIV Golf Tour. That would be kind of not what you want as a PGA Tour member. Somebody being able to kind of manipulate both sides and using his leverage, but. Yeah, it's definitely odd to see those two at the same time being announced. Like, you would like it for them both to be announced separately together on that. But as it goes, I think the only mistake here is man, I wish they would have given those waited to give those spots out and given one of those spots to Ludwig Gobert at the Hero World Challenge. That would have been just really nice to see him play in a limited field. Not to say that Lucas and Justin aren't worthy picks, but definitely wish Ludwig would have been in this field.
Yeah, you wonder if those guys, you know, they're TGL guys, so maybe they get the little, hey, thanks for your loyalty, now come down and play the Hero. But I think it was Tom Kim who got the Hero bid last year, and we saw the video that came out of, you know, the Bahamas. It was so cool of him interacting with guys he'd looked up to for years, and as he's this budding star, just being around them, and he's like a sponge for information. It would have been very cool to see a similar thing, you know, happen with Ludwig going down there and playing with all these guys. But, you know, who knows what the future holds. On the Xander point, I think this is very interesting because you noted there about Cantlay's involvement with the policy board, and we actually have another policy board piece of news that we're going to get to finish the show out. But, you know, I think as cryptic as Cantlay's been at time with just his actions and his words, the thing that I think is very clear from him is that he's trying to advocate for the players, and by an extension of the players, he's trying to advocate for himself and how we extract what we feel is the value we deserve out of all these scenarios. So it makes sense that a guy like that would, you know, end up on the policy board and be part of the group that's reviewing all these different, you know, kind of groups that are saying we want to invest money into the tour and things like that. In this same story that was referenced from Xander, there's a quote that he had on Jay Monahan. And he said, "I wouldn't mind seeing some new leadership take place on our circuit. I'd be lying if I said that I have a whole lot of trust after what happened. That's definitely the consensus that I get when I talk to a lot of the guys. It's a bit contradictory when they call it our tour and things can happen without us even knowing." And so I just wonder how you react to a quote like that, knowing he's so close with a guy like Patrick Cantlay, who is influencing decisions for the tour going forward.
Well, it goes back to your original point in that article that you were kind of referencing to, the one recently that came about talking about how the PGA Tour had talked to all these tournament directors on what next year is going to look like, going to the bigger cities and the bigger markets for more money. And it all goes kind of points to is what is the value of the PGA Tour and its players? And is it overvalued right now? Is everything being allocated correctly as far as a pie chart goes? Are we going to cut into the charities money, which is one of the points that one of the tournament directors said. It's like, yeah, we could do that, but we're not going to give as much money to charity, which is something that the PGA Tour has stood on for ever since the beginning of its existence and the nonprofit status that it does have. So when we talk about what you just said with Xander Schauffele, and I think you have to point to, and this is what's going to be decided over the next year or two, is this $20 million purse sustainable? Is it the right number? Yeah. Is it the right format? Do we need more teams involved, like similar to how the LIV golf is structured a little bit? Even Rory's come back on this, and I think he's starting to see the life and potentially having a team type of structure on the PGA Tour. And I'm not against it. I think this is something that the original idea from the Premier Golf League by the guy who introduced this to a couple players was a realistic, great idea and something that I think a lot of players would love to be involved with. But, you know, it's what do we want the PGA Tour to look like over the next couple decades? Is it team golf? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
It would it be more compelling to watch for you at home, Charlie? I think it could be. I think it would be more fun for us to cover from a network standpoint because you're following multiple storylines. You're definitely getting a more personality out of the guys, like you see from the teams at the Ryder Cups, the President's Cups, how much they play for one another. And you can even reference the LIV Golf Tour a little bit in this and how much. And you can obviously say that the love that they have for one another looks fabricated or fake, but I think you can't deny that the fact that they really enjoy playing team golf. I think most of these guys played college golf. They enjoyed playing with one another and fighting for one another. But you know, the PGA Tour for forever has just been, you know, just you out there, and that's the only thing we focused on. But I tell you what, for us to show more golf on TV and show more players and show more storylines, and you add a team component to it, it gives us an opportunity to cover so much more of the golf course. Because right now, really, we're just covering who wins the golf tournament and the storyline with that. And you throw in a couple other players that, you know, are on the back nine that could have the difference between a team championship. I really think it adds an element that I'm not against. So the team, I know a lot of PGA Tour fans have been against the team format, but I think it's something that could work, and Rory's come around to it. It's just been a little bit of a, you know, because the PGA Tour is so against the LIV Golf Tour at the beginning, it's really hard to come around to it because you're either on one side or the other. But it seems like we're starting to see a potential middle ground figured out here.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing like the brotherhood you see between guys like Brooks Koepka and Matthew Wolff, and you really just love to see guys like that out there.
Hey, no, it's more drama to cover, right?
It 100% is. And I think if we've learned anything from this past year, maybe, you know, 2+ years, the only constant right now on the PGA Tour and professional golf at large is change. And I think that is going to be the story of the PGA Tour for the next 2, 5, 10, 15 years. I think my guess where we end up is the majors remain, because the majors are the most important things in golf. And then maybe some of those, you know, flagship tour events, but that are almost less connected to the tour than they are connected to the players who represent them. So I'm thinking like the Genesis Invitational and Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer Invitational, you know, the Memorial with Jack Nicklaus. Like, I could see those things living on and looking similar to whatever the tournament iteration of the past is as we go forward. But I could definitely see the rest of that schedule getting stripped down and changed and formatted to accommodate however you can get the most money into the game, really.
That's exactly what you just said, is getting.
Yeah.
And I think that's
how do you get the money into the game?
And that to me is what I think Rory might be seeing, is like, okay, we're looking for more investment from different areas to try to bring more money to the PGA Tour. And it's, let's say it is teams. And this is where it gets a little different, because one of the coolest things about being on the PGA Tour is that you can create a brand for yourself. So you can, you know, when you think of Jordan Spieth, what do you think of? You think of Under Armour. You think of what you see from them. When you think of Rory, you think of Nike. So when we talk about teams that potentially could come in and buy, let's say there's going to be a team TaylorMade. So you'll have 4 TaylorMade guys on a team, or let's say you're going to have a team Morgan Stanley or a team Nike. So those are all things that would be great. It brings more money into the PGA Tour, but what you potentially lose and what guys have tried to avoid is the brand that you create for yourself. You kind of become like everyone else and loses a little bit of that value of, you know, this is kind of who I am. Jordan Spieth is Under Armour. This, nobody else is like Jordan Spieth on the PGA Tour. Well, Matthew Fitzpatrick, but that's to my point though, the PGA Tour definitely needs more investment like you're talking about. And whether it's team golf and bringing in brands that want to be, that want to buy teams, like Srixon buys a team, like, great, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But you kind of lose that element that makes a PGA Tour an independent contractor and a personal brand.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of Jordan Spieth, that's a good segue. big changes on the policy board. We heard last week, I don't even know if we covered this. The list of things that I, like, did we talk about that or did we not talk about that? They continue to grow with every new piece of news that comes out. But last week we heard Rory McIlroy resigning his position on the tour policy board. And you know, I think there's a pretty clean statement from the tour, but Rory in his comments over at the DP World Tour Championship kind of hinted to his, you know, maybe displeasure with the amount of time that was, you know, required for his involvement and not really wanting to commit to that anymore. And then maybe there being some frustration over what was asked of him and the public position he had to take, especially against Liv. And then that kind of getting flipped this summer when the tour kind of struck this framework agreement with the PIF. So Rory steps down, leaves his position on the tour policy board, and we have a replacement now. And that replacement is Jordan Spieth. Jordan has great resume in terms of involvement on these sort of governing bodies for on the player side of the tour. He was on the Player Advisory Council from 2017, 2018, was the PAC chairman in 2018. He was also a player director from 2019 to 21. So everybody who's keeping score at home, your current policy board with Rory out is Charlie Hoffman, Patrick Cantlay, Peter Malnati, Webb Simpson, Tiger Woods, and now Jordan Spieth. And then in 2024, when Charlie Hoffman rolls off that board, the current Player Advisory Council chairman, Adam Scott, will replace him, and that will finalize your policy board. And that's an important thing because that's a group of people that are reviewing all these bids of potential financing that can maybe supplant whatever PIF comes up with, or they could be the group that's reviewing the PIF plan saying we like that or we don't like that. So You're a buddy of Jordan's. Any sort of insight as to, you know, why he wanted to be involved, how this whole opportunity came about?
He's been extremely involved in everything. He's been a very silent player in behind the scenes, how much work he's put in to getting it structured correctly and getting the right people in the correct seats to give the players the most amount of control that they can and have the right board members that are going to be sitting on the other side of them to be able to work hand in hand with, to be able to help push the things they want to get through. And you mentioned Tiger Woods, you mentioned Cantlay, you mentioned Adam Scott. Like these were all the names that I've been hearing that have been the main players behind the scenes that have been really calling a lot of the shots and getting the structure up top correct. And I think those are the main, when it comes to like Jay Monahan's job, like this is the group that are going to be determining the moves that they're eventually going to make. You know, I really think Adam Scott, Patrick Cantlay, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, Peter Malnati, Webb Simpson. I mean, that's, to me, it's a great group of players that come from different, you know, areas on the tour. You got Tiger Woods and being the best player of all time versus, you know, Peter Malnati, who gives you a different perspective from somebody who might be battling for the top 125 year in and year out. So that's how that policy board's always been, is different perspectives. But I really think Jordan being elected to the policy board was a great, great move because he is very, very smart. He's extremely savvy when it comes to business, just as a super cerebral person. You could see that in his interviews. Just when he talks about certain business stuff, I'm like, dude, like you could have been a hell of a CEO. When I listen to him talk about stuff, he is so forward thinking and stuff like that, that I just let him talk and I'm just like, I don't know what you're talking about, but you sound like you're saying the right things. But so good for the PGA Tour getting that one right. And I'm really excited that Jordan got on there because I think he's going to be a really nice voice for the policy board moving forward.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of just the makeup of that group, especially with Adam Scott rolling on, because then you have like
he's great. He's so even keeled. He's been around the game. He's seen the ups and downs of golf. Just a great advocate for the game of golf.
That's a nice makeup of group, and again, important as we you know, that kind of balances out the votes from the non-player directors on this board as we figure out what the future of the PGA Tour is. So man. Golly, we got through. We really didn't even cover everything we wanted to cover. Probably in December, we'll do a full wrap on all that we mentioned off the top of the show in terms of, you know, the tour, just reflecting on the year that just happened and, you know, what next year is going to look like. But that's all for us today. And we have we're heading into Thanksgiving week. So we have, as I mentioned before, the Thanksgiving League, which you don't know anything about right now. And we don't want you to know anything about it until this episode drops. That's coming on Wednesday, which will be accompanied by a social media graphic. And I would just, the only tease I'd offer is just think about my teams a little bit. Just give them a little bit of thought. Don't just let your face value reaction to my teams just be, what the hell was this guy thinking? Because I think if you let them, you kind of, it's like a fine wine, you know, you kind of let it just mature a little bit. After a while, like, oh, I like this taste. I've acquired this taste. That's all I'm going to say there. Any thoughts you want to leave the people with ahead of the Thanksgiving League on Wednesday?
I mean, first off, nobody has no idea what you're talking about because they have no idea what the Thanksgiving League is. It's just a silly draft that we did. That's hysterical. It's probably one of the hardest I've laughed doing a podcast. So it's definitely one to tune into. So looking forward to that. God, crazy day. I mean, just TGL, all of that news, insane, man. I'm just a head spinning week in the game of golf. And I have to add one thing to the episode, and it's for the fantasy football people out here. I made a trade Sunday, 15 minutes before kickoff. My team is in shambles. Wow. I'm 7-3. I'm in a great spot, about to go 7-4. And for those that are listening, I made a trade to try to get Devin to A-Chain, did that really fast.
I think
fast,
that's right. If really it's not, fast people know from Miami. About. Yeah, yeah.
He's like had those 3 weeks that he actually did play. He's like a top 15 running back still somehow. So I made a trade for him, and I gave away DeAndre Hopkins, Jerry Jeudy, and Najee Harris. So honestly, just giving away depth. But I'm on at the RSN and I'm looking at my fantasy football score, and I see that a chain is out in the first quarter. So it's just, is there anything worse than making a trade for a guy and he gets hurt in the first quarter? It's like, what?
I thought you were going to say you traded for Joe Burrow. I thought that's where you're going with this.
Similar deal. Trading for somebody and they get hurt, it just sucks. But anyways,
I'm in a similar, like, I hit the panic button a little bit because I've had Justin Jefferson all year long just sitting on the IR. Mm-hmm. And I also was a Devontae Adams and Devontae Smith owner. And I like Devontae Smith, but I also have Jalen Hurts and DeAndre Swift on my roster. So I was like, got to diversify a little bit. I flipped those two and the Gus bus, which was looking like a real mistake, for DeAndre Hopkins and Jalen Waddle. And then I'm watching like Devontae Adams score a touchdown this week. I'm like, what was I thinking here? Just smashing the panic button, hoping we'll go 8-3 this week. Nobody cares about our fantasy teams.
Yeah, no. Just shut this podcast off. We're done talking.
Well, let me just leave you with one last little clip, little tease.
Oh, I'm Charlie and I like margaritas.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in on Wednesday. We'll see you then.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.